It was fascinating for me to discover as I sat here and as we were told in whose memory it is, the fact somebody that was nifter quite a while ago should still be such a living part of the shul, and people speak of him as in present terms almost, and hearing how the shul and seeing what the shul has become, it really says, it gives new meaning to the Gemara of Marzar Eim Bechayim Afim Bechayim, that when a person leaves over a legacy that's living, they live. And it's just the memory of the person who's created something full of life is full of life itself. And it's a covered neschus to be taking part in that, in the Shabbos dedicated to his memory. And may Hashem have an aliyah. Tremendous yasher koyach to the community for the warmth, the extraordinary warmth, and so many people come over, introduce themselves, told me different things, and it's really very, the ease and the comfort and the warmth that people express makes it very, very pleasant to be in everyone's company. And I echo the Morad Asra's sense of that we're able to find so much commonality and so much issues that we both struggle with in common. So it's made it extraordinarily unique, the Shabbos here. And the first suggested the topic to speak about my father-in-law and Reb Nosson Tzvi. I must say that I suppressed a smile because it is very befitting we should speak about Reb Nosson Tzvi. This was, his Yahrzeit was last Shabbos. He was a son of Chicago in every sense of the word. His parents were core members of the community. He went to the local schools until he went to the yeshiva. And in many ways, Chicago had a very special place in the Mir Yeshiva's early years. Reb Meir Finkel, Zechon Levrach, his father, was a host for my father-in-law and his father when they came fundraising. And Chicago had a lot of Altamiras. I remember Getzel Kagan was an Altamira, and I'm sure there are many more. I didn't know all of them, but it was a town that had a mirror presence and was very, very helpful in the Mir Yeshiva in the earlier years. So that was befitting, and that I thought was a fitting topic. I was thinking that when the topic was suggested, it sounded as if there are common denominators. And at first glance, it's hard to imagine two people, two yeshivas, more different than each other. My father, Zechon Levrach, was very European. Reb Nosson Tzvi was very American. My father-in-law was a person who was extremely discreet. He kept everything very much to himself. He was very friendly and open, but kept everything. Reb Nosson Tzvi was very candid, very open. My father was kind of restrained in a European way. Reb Nosson Tzvi was warm and hugging and so on. My father-in-law's shita in running the yeshiva was an extraordinary asceticism. His sense was, if it's not absolutely necessary, then the yeshiva doesn't give it and shouldn't give it. Reb Nosson Tzvi's shita was that the more you give, for a Ben Torah deserves the best only, and then expect the best. Almost polarly opposite shitas. My father would not let the yeshiva build more. He was okay with expanding the Beis Medrash. He did expand some of it, not the Beis Medrash, but the floors on top. He refused to let it get bigger. My brother-in-law built a huge empire of buildings and things like that. Many, many ways, very, very different. And I was almost, the idea of presenting a picture that would represent some sort of continuity, I was stunned. I didn't think there was something like that. I didn't have to think about it. And the more I thought about it, I went back another generation. I think I saw a thread that was much deeper than the things I mentioned. And a thread that's very, very important to understand the yeshiva's success in many ways. The yeshiva's success in becoming such a huge yeshiva, the yeshiva's success in being able to maintain itself financially in some extraordinarily difficult times. The last few the years when they after 2008 when things began to tank were incredibly difficult years. And the yeshiva managed, they carried a lot of debt for a while, and Baruch Hashem managed to pull itself together. The internal workings of the yeshiva and having such a large group of people interact positively is not easy. And Baruch Hashem, Adheina, HaKadosh Baruch has helped. And I think if there is a foundation in the yeshiva that maybe is the reason for all that Siyata Dishmaya. And I will start by going back to the founder in Eretz Yisrael, Rabbi Blaise Yudel. I would like to share a story about him, something about my father-in-law, something about Reb Nosson Tzvi, and then try to understand the common denominator and find something of it in Chazal. Let me start with a story about Rabbi Blaise Yudel. By Chassidim, it's common, Motzei Shabbos, they tell Sipur Tzadikim. So I guess this is a bit of a Chassidish minig. But these Sipur Tzadikim have to be true. I don't know, others might also be true, but these I can pretty much testify firsthand witness. I don't know if it counts as Sipur Tzadikim if it's true, but b'di'avad, a true story might also work as a Sipur Tzadikim. Was that the Rav passing differently? Or I... As Rav Yaakov Miller, the famous Batchan, once said, he said, I hate Batchanim that invent false stories. He says, I invent only true stories. Rav Blaise Yudel had the biggest, most important chashev yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, in Europe by all counts. Mir Yeshiva was the yeshiva where he came from. All the yeshivas had the most chashev chaburis, etc. The war destroyed it, went to Shanghai, and then they came to America, but as the yeshiva, it was gone. And he came to Eretz Yisrael, he was not a young man, and he had to start all over. His gevurim that he had in Europe were not there anymore, that was all gone. He had people that he had money from, the Talmidim all were in Shanghai and in America, they didn't come back to Eretz Yisrael, the vast majority of them, and so on. And he had to restart a yeshiva, and going from being at the very top to sort of scrambling for the bottom is not an easy task for anyone. It's not easy to do, and certainly emotionally, it's almost impossible to go from being number one to being an upstart and just starting, and so on. This story I heard at my Shver Shiva, and I was sitting there, you know, we sat most of the day around, and a very chashev-looking person was sitting next to me. You know, frak and a hamburg, very, very chashev. And I asked my brother-in-laws, who's this guy? They don't know. No, ha'achreich lo yigune. And I turn around and I say, who do I have the covenant of sitting next to? So he told me his name is either Sofer or Shribe. I don't remember. I know it's one of those two. I don't remember which one. I said, and how did the Rav know my late father-in-law? He said, I didn't. So I said, so what brings you here? He said, the Kesher is my father and Rabbi Yudel. His father was the Das Sofer. He was the Pressburger Rav and a descendant of the Chassam Sofer. And that's why I remember the name was either Sofer or Shribe, because some went to Shribe, some went to Sofer, but one or the other. He came to Israel with nothing. His world was destroyed. And he's sitting and... He's sitting alone in Givat Shaul, or wherever he lived. And there's a knock on his door. So you're talking about 48, maybe, 49. That was the year. And Reb Blaise Yudel is there. And he ushers him in. And Reb Blaise Yudel says, I would like to make a proposal to the Rav that we open a yeshiva jointly. So he said, you know, I'm really flattered, but... It's a very different style, Hungarian, Pressburg style learning, and yeshiva is extremely different than a Litvish yeshiva like that the Mir really sort of embodies. He said, I can't see how that would work. So he says, let me tell you what my plan is. My plan is that you run the yeshiva educationally, and I will send you money every month to support the yeshiva. So... He was taken. He said, "I mean, like, what's in it for you? Like, why?" He said, I was thinking, there are many, many halakim of Torah. And Hungarian Torah does not have anybody to continue that mesoras. And every mesoras in Torah must be continued. We spoke about to the women about different shvatim. This is what's continued. And I decided you're the most appropriate person, so I want you to get a yeshiva off the ground. And that's what he did. For 3 years, he sponsored him. I didn't know the story. I don't think anybody else in the family knew the story. A very similar story I once heard from Rabbi Yeshvei. Rabbi Yeshvei was sitting next to me, Hasna, and he was telling me some things about when he was Nais Yisrael. And he said he was Nais Yisrael in 1951. And 50 or 51 he was. And Rabbi Leizudel came over to him. He knew him because his father had been a Slapatka. They knew it. And he told Rabbi Leizudel, he said, you know, you're American. Maybe you have some money that you lend me. So Rabbi Leizudel said, I was a little bit of a wise guy. And I said, what does Rashiva need money for? He said, he looked at me very seriously. He said, you know, the Sephardim don't have anybody to teach them. And I thought I could take him into yeshiva and would work. But it's very different, the language, the style, it doesn't work. I need to make a Sephardi yeshiva and I need money. Maybe you have a source to get the money from. And Rabbi Yeshvei told me, what was it his business? He was a destroyed man. His yeshiva needed to start from zero. He needed to raise nickels and dimes to make it happen. What was his incentive? And Rabbi Yeshvei gave me a very strong shmooze about achrayas and so on. Those are two stories about Rabbi Leizudel. Now, I would like to move on to my father-in-law. My father-in-law, one of his many kapedas, was not to take a penny from the yeshiva to live off. Not for his personal expenses, not for any expenses he incurred, not for his living, nothing. Where he had money to live off, I don't think anyone knows. I'm serious. I don't think my mother really knows. We have some idea. The most reasonable explanation. He didn't live extremely comfortably. There wasn't a lot. But whatever it was, he never touched a nickel at yeshiva. And he even when he took four trips in his lifetime, he took four or five trips to fundraise for the yeshiva. When he took his last trip, he turned around to my mother-in-law, and he said, it's the fourth or fifth time I'm going for the yeshiva, and Baruch Hashem, I was able to manage it without taking a penny from yeshiva. Almost every time he had done something for someone else who paid him for a certain sum to take care of something, whatever the affairs of people that he did that, and that's where he got the money for the ticket and so on. And there is some sense that he might have lived off, in his younger years, they lived in an ice factory in the Bnei Brak, whole story, and he doubled up as a night watchman. I don't know. I don't think anyone really knows, but that was reality. And it was something to him, a few weeks before his nifta, he turned to my mother-in-law, and he told her, there is some money here for you, and there is money there for the yeshiva, and remember, the two have nothing to do with each other. The yeshiva money has nothing to do with you, and your money has nothing to do with the yeshiva. It didn't come from the yeshiva, it's not going to yeshiva, and the yeshiva money didn't come from us, and it's not going to us. It's yeshiva money. And didn't take a penny from it. So, it's a nice midah, but what exactly is that midah? What exactly was it? Before we go on to Nassim Tzvi, I'd like to explain it, and then we'll go on to Nassim Tzvi and his world. In a very similar way. The Maral says, he speaks about the concept of gas ruach. Gas ruach in Hebrew is an expression which means a balgaiva, someone who's haughty. And it's sort of, the word gas ruach could be translated as coarse, but it's not coarse in the sense of being vulgar, it's coarse in the sense of being haughty, arrogant, full of yourself. And the Maral explains, Ruchnius is something intangible. And as such, it should not, quote unquote, occupy space in this world. If a person walks around and says, he carries his deeds in his stomach or on his shoulders on display. You know, Rav Yisai, you know, I'm interrupting my Shas program now to speak a few words of chesed to you. So the person is taking something that belongs to a different world, to a world that is ruchnius, and he's turning it into gashmius. He's turning it into a round of applause and a write-up on one of these things over here. That's what he's doing. So he's gas ruach. He's somebody who's taking a ruchnistic thing and making it coarse and tangible. Torah requires, for it to survive, it's shaloka derech hateva that people will be osek in Torah and not do things that economically are viable and give them what they need. When Chazal say that whoever is mavir ol derech, whoever takes on old Torah, mavir min ol derech eretz, Chazal understood well the contradiction between dedicating yourself to Torah and being part of the economic life of humanity. They are mutually contradictory. Theoretically, if the world is running economically with perfect efficiency, there's not supposed to be any money left over for sitting and learning. That's the reality of economics. You always have whatever goods you have always take up the money and so on. Shevet Levi, it's something that exists not within that realm. And that's why the Rambam, in one place the Rambam speaks about not taking charity money for learning, and one place he speaks about dedicating your life and letting HaKadosh Baruch Hu give you what you need. And most people quote one or the other Rambam. It depends what type of yeshiva you make an appeal for. If it's Torah Cheretz yeshiva, you get this Rambam. If it's a cooler learning yeshiva, you get that Rambam. But the Rambam was one Rambam. I think if you learn the Rambam well, the truth is like this. The resolution to the steer in the Rambams is the Rambam Pirush HaMishnayos Pirkei Avos, where he says clearly, you need to find a way to support the Mechamim B'derach Kavod. The panhandling style of door-to-door is what he's against. And he writes, you know, you allocate certain percentage and so on. That's an answer. But I think there's another answer in the very words of the Rambam. If you look at the Lashon in the Rambam, in both places, he spells out two different motives for learning. The Rambam in the beginning, where he speaks about Nilas Talmud Torah, a person should not say, you know what? It's not such a bad parnassa to let people support me sit and learn. That's how I'll make parnassa. It's clear. You look at the Rambam's Lashon. The person is using it as a means to get support. And that the Rambam says, it's not part of the economic activity of the world, and to demand charity as such, it's not part of that. In Zroim, where he speaks about the extraordinary nobility of dedicating a life to learning, he says, if somebody's nodva ruchai, somebody became inspired, and he's moved up into a world of kulei Torah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will take care of him. In other words, if the person's motive is as a means, you know, it's how do I parnasa? Okay, you know, this I'll do kolo. That's wrong, and that's borderline us in the Rama. If a person says nafshi chashke b'Torah, that's where Shevet Levi comes in. So, in order for Torah to survive, it belongs to a sphere that's not gas ruach; it's ruach. And if a person makes it gas, if a person makes it into something coarse, then it can't survive, because then it needs to bend to the laws of economics. The laws of economics don't allow for it. What does it mean about when we're talking about a yeshiva? If a person identifies his own ego or packet with the yeshiva, that's gas ruach. If yeshiva means my yeshiva, then we're talking about you. Some people have a business. Some people have a racehorse. Some people have a yeshiva. So we're talking about you. We're not talking about Torah. But if Torah and yeshiva has nothing to do with you, if Hungarian Torah that's going to be run by the Rosh Yeshiva Rav Sofer is what you're killing yourself for, And Sephardi Torah run by Sephardim is what you're killing yourself for, because Torah is there. Then you're living Torah not as yourself, but you've, instead of Torah becoming part of your portfolio, you become part of Torah's portfolio. And that's where you have that type of hanhaga shelok derech hateva. And I think that was my father-in-law's sense of it. And that's, my father was confident. My father was not a phenomenal fundraiser. He didn't have any of that. Certainly not the scope of fundraising. He never, two or three days before Rosh Chodesh, he had set himself a time. That's when he would start worrying about getting the money. But it never was his money. It had nothing to do with him. Not even the money for the going on the trip to America to raise the money for yeshiva. And he, I think that way, the yeshiva and its business he ran in a way that he took himself out of the equation. He was a person, he's not taking covet. Besides the fact that it was something that he was extremely, it was something that he was, what's the right word for it? It was something that that repelled him. But I think also anything from yeshiva that would make him identify his personal needs or ego or finance with the yeshiva would take a yeshiva and make it into a personal issue. That was him. My brother, Reb Nosson Tzvi, I would like to mention two things about him, two stories, and then look at and find it in the Chazal that I think describes that type of hanaga. The first thing, I said this at the Hesped, the Mir Yeshiva. The Mir Yeshiva was a huge yeshiva. And a very chashuv yeshiva. It is. His taking in Talmidim by the droves didn't have to do so much with his desire to build a big, big yeshiva with many Talmidim. It was more to do with not turning away Talmidim. And that's why even Talmidim that were weak and very weak, and he had the luxury of making a bar that's kind of very high and saying we're taking only the top 5%, and I don't need to support all these buildings with thousands of people. I can just cut the bar and have a wonderfully prestigious yeshiva and still be very chashuv and still make it onto the dome pictures. Didn't need to have all those things. He did it because every bacher that crossed his way, and he knew that he could turn him on to learning the way he had been turned on learning, that he did it for the bacher's sake. Way before he dreamt being Rosh Yeshiva, any bacher that came to me yeshiva that needed help, he always had time to help him. It had to do about the bacher, nothing to do about himself. If there was a other yeshiva or group of yeshivas that considered themselves to be more elite, we won't mention the name, but many misguided bachim thought that yeshiva is a much chashuv yeshiva, but it's hard to get in. So one elul before elul, a group of boys came. The other yeshiva didn't let them in. I think they have to six, whatever it is. So they came to Reb Nosson to come to yeshiva. It was quite clear that they're in waiting. It was quite clear that this wasn't their first option or the first, and there was no question, of course. At the end of Elul, at the end of Sukkot, the other yeshiva opened up place and they came to say goodbye. It wasn't very easy. I mean, you know, Nelson had been the finisher sitting with a welcoming smile and you know, take him in, and they came in. They had no choice. They couldn't leave without saying goodbye. And Nelson said, "I have one favor to ask of you." I said, "What?" He said, "You are here. You liked it. We had a very good relationship. I want that to continue. Feel that this is home for you. Whatever you need, whenever you need, come and talk and ask for it." I don't know if it's humanly possible in Midas to describe that type of Midas, and it was genuine. Reb Nosson had no contrivance to him. He was as genuine as it came. And if something can epitomize divorcing oneself from yeshiva, I don't think anything speaks louder than that type of interaction. I'm sure everyone who's done yeshiva understands well what that means. I had a friend of mine who opened up a yeshiva, and he told me half jokingly, I asked him, what are your emotions? He said, my first emotion is that I'm very upset at the first bacher that's leaving the yeshiva. You know, I think that was also genuine. I think he was expressed a sincere emotion. There was another part of where I felt there was an erasing of boundaries, where there's no self. And that was the amount, you could come to him, anybody, anytime, all the time. You know, the idea of having some space for yourself, I mean, you know, his house was Grand Central Station and not a big house, and even his bedroom. I mean, once I came in to say goodbye, I was going back, whatever it was, and he'd already gone to sleep, and so I apologized. He said, no, you know, he told us I'd come in, he's in his pajamas, and yes, Shmuz, he didn't expect to have a centimeter of time or space to himself. It was always, if somebody needs you, and this is always a reference, somebody's knocking, somebody wants. When you somebody wants, there were 1,000 people here today. I mean, this tells us somebody come back some other time. There was nothing, you know, as long as he was conscious, you could come in. He could be laying on the bed, he could not speak. There wasn't ever a moment of personal space. If I am Rosh Yeshiva, then that means I am always available. I want to say over Chazal, and finish with that Chazal, because it's a Chazal I say over sometimes on Tisha B'Av when we do some of the kinnis, and it's a Chazal that I think is extraordinary. So it's a Mechilta. Mechilta is the Medrash Halacha on Shmos. It says in Onotane, it says in the Pasuk a terrible curse if someone pains an almana or a yasim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will wreak revenge. And we understand that. We understand it's such a terrible thing and so on. The Medrash, the Chazal, move over the inyan of causing another person pain or suffering to a whole new area, which is astounding in what they expect. Kvar hoya Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Shimon Yotzen Laharig. Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Shimon were being taken out to be killed. They were Asara Ruge Malchus. Omla Rabbi Shimon Rabbi Shmuel, Rebbe. He says, Rabbi Shimon told Rabbi Shmuel, Rebbe, Libi Yotze, I can't come to grips with this. I don't know why I'm being killed. At least if I understood what aver I'm being called for, what am I being held accountable for? Omla Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Shimon. So Rabbi Shmuel asked Rabbi Shimon, Miyamecha, did it not happen that somebody came to you for a din Torah or for a shayla, vakafto, and you kept them waiting, until you finished drinking your coffee, we'll call it, putting on your shoes, putting on your clothes, and Torah said him, if you cause another person pain, echod ine meruba, vechni meuot, whether it's a lot or a little bit. When he told him this, he replied to him, Nichamtani Rebbe, you've put me to rest. Now I understand what I've done wrong. It's incredible. It's incredible. If somebody needs a raya for Teres Emes, this is a mechilta to hang up. In the world around you, you pride yourself, secretaries and double secretaries, and, you know, I have no time, and this being important means that. This is the way Chazal held themselves accountable. That if you're in a position to give Torah, in Din Torah or Shaila, then yourself and your own time and own zone disappears. It's something that first and foremost, every one of us who is in Kli Kodesh, it's an incredibly demanding Chazal. And every one of us who's in place to do a favor, a person who can help others financially. Don't have much, but when you hear the third person knocking on the door, you get kind of antsy. I can finish my supper. And this Chazal haunts me. I still finish my supper, don't worry, but it haunts me. It's not Chazal, I don't say it's so good after this Chazal. A person can help somebody else. This is the way Chazal understood a Ruchnistic enterprise, that you cannot, if in Ruchnius, in the world of Ruchnius, if you whatever you take on to yourself, you should become absorbed by it and not the other. So when I reflected a lot about this, I said to myself, you know, as different as they were, and each one was a world in his own and built the yeshiva in a very different way, but the common denominator was none of them existed as self vis-a-vis the yeshiva. It wasn't their yeshiva. They belonged to the yeshiva. And each one expressed it with Rav Leizudel's running around. And there's so many other stories about that. Somebody else more famous, he was in Eretz Yisrael and he gave his own money they should give to Bachem Del Sey Chaburis and things like that. It was my father-in-law's fanatical devotion to not taking a penny because the yeshiva is not for him. He's there for the yeshiva, not the yeshiva for him. Reb Nosson Tzvi's total lack of self, total lack of his own, of injecting any of his own feelings, emotions, his shortcomings, physical shortcomings, nothing. That's a thread that ran through the yeshiva. And it was not only those three, it was one of my rebbeim, Reb Chaim, Reb Nochum. The Rav told me he went into Reb Chaim Ashayla. They let him in. Reb Chaim was laying in his pajamas. And a bacha's coming in. It's a bit pressing, and he's there. Reb Nochum would climb the steps up like this, and if you came to speak in learning, he never said, I'm really not in the position to speak in learning now. There was extraordinary amida that ran through it. And when you divorce yourself from Torah, it's only Torah. And Torah has its own Siyata Rishmaya. Torah runs, it. Once you leave the orbit of this world, the laws of economics cease to have a hold on you. It's like when you blast off and you pass that. And then you belong to a different set of rules. And that's called, like the Rambam says, that Kadosh Baruch Hu is doeg for us. And somehow he's mamzile the davar nisrael, like he says. Great people, extraordinary people. I mean, giants. And each one in his own midah, and in this common midah that sort of encompasses all of them. Let's take some lesson of it, that in all the good things we do, and in each one in his own things that he does, to try somewhere along the line to do something to sort of put some distance between himself and the good that he does. It goes a long way in adding a tremendous amount of Siyata Shmaya to the good that we do, because that which is not us, that which is not part of our Gas Ruach, belongs to the world that HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes care of with a whole different set of rules. And Bez Hashem, we should be able to do things L'Shem Shemayim and be Zochet to the Siyata Shmaya of things that are done Kul L'Hashem.
I would like to thank Rabbi and Rebbetzin Lopiansky for joining us this Shabbos in Chicago. It was very uplifting and enlightening. We appreciate you coming very much. We're having dessert.